Good afternoon, everybody. It is PGA DFS Strategy time here on the Osmo YouTube channel. My buddy Ben Razin today got a little bit of a change of pace, if you will, as the music kind of alluded to there, as we go from coast to coast, sunny San Diego over to Cromwell, Connecticut. Only time of the year to visit New England is right now. Let me tell you that. Sorry, Ben, I know that you still live kind of close, but talking from a little bit of experience, that's what I would be doing. And it is a great field assembled here for the travelers. So obviously a lot of players are joining me in that thought and visiting New England nowadays. But before we get into all those players, I want to, of course, thank our sponsor of the show, Monkey Knife Fight. And of course, if you guys haven't heard of them, their player props-based contests are easy to play. They don't require the time commitment that other DFS sites do in order to be competitive. And Ben, we're going to go over a couple of props before we get into it. But also, if you don't want to play just PGA, they offer NBA. Of course, NFL is coming up. They've been offering soccer for the Euro Championship. So a lot of fun stuff going on over at Monkey Knife Fight. And of course, use promo code AWESOMO on your first deposit and get matched up to $100. And I've got a good one coming up for today. Last week, we did fairly well at guessing the 72.5. We thought the best guys would get under that. We did pretty well for a 4X. And I'm going right back to them. DJ and Bryson DeChambeau, the line is set at 2.5 under. Now, Ben, I think DJ is coming into some form, but I'm going to ask you about Bryson. A very, very tumultuous back nine, including headed a streaker come on the golf course right when he was in the middle of the fairway. Some weird things go on. So I think the hangover effect is there for Bryson, but I think DJ is starting to come in. So I'll go under on DJ, over on Bryson. You can take it from there.
Bryson's a tricky one because, you know, you can look at it one of two ways. He also had the lead on some, like he was right there. And then when you say the wheels, you're putting it mildly, it was atrocious. The thing that's interesting though, he did what he kind of always plans to do. He gained 5.5 strokes off the tee and 5 strokes putting. He's just around the green game left him. So I'm with you here. I don't think these guys start super fast by any stretch. This is not a difficult golf course, but it's a par 70. It's a different type of feel. It's not one that you can overpower to an extent, but a lot of different types can succeed here. So I'm gonna stick with you with Monkey Knife Fight. It's a different way to get exposure, but it's not to say, of course, these are two of the most dangerous players in the field.
For sure, no doubt about it. And if Bryson gets the driver going on some of the angles that he takes here, he very well could shoot 4 or 5 under pretty easily. But again, that's just what I'm going with, a little bit of hangover effect. So let's talk a little bit more about the Travelers and the TPC River Highlands. It's one of the shortest golf courses on tour. But typically what we see with shorter courses is the fairways or the fairway accuracy is not that high. Well, here it is, one of the highest on tour. But greens in regulation, this is the thing that surprised me. 70% fairways hit, but under 70% greens hit. Typically, it's the reverse of that. So, Ben, what do you think that says about River Highlands?
It's interesting. Yeah, it's definitely a different feel than we've seen. But the thing I love about this course is when you look at the leaderboards, you quickly realize there's not one strategy. Bubba has won 3 times here. Chez has won. Dustin Johnson, who's just an elite player, has won. Paul Casey loves this place. Brian Harman loves this place. There's so many different ways to get it done. You can lay back. You can turn it into a wedge fest. You've got to make your putts. I think we all know that. But I love events where you can blend the Kevin Nas of the world with the heavy hitters. That's not something we can say each and every week.
Yeah, totally agree. You forgot to mention, or maybe we forgot to mention, Bryson is working off of, what, 3 straight top 10s here, or at least 2. So interesting enough that Bryson can get it done here and Brian Harman can get it done. I mean, 2 obviously opposite end spectrum of the players. So love that. Now, it's been here a long time, this tournament, over 20 years, tons of course history. Do you think that leads to itself because the greens are tricky, that this is a course where we can bump up course history in our models a little bit?
So this is where I always try to draw a distinction. I would love for my guys to have played here a lot. I'm not saying I want them to play bad, but I'm less concerned with how they actually played than if they just played. Give me a guy who's got, you know, plenty of experience here and he's done some things and I'll live with it. I don't think it's imperative that he top 10s every time he comes to Travelers, but there's something to say of handling greens in a different part of the country and a different type of tournament. So I would like my guys preferably to at least have some reps here at River Highlands.
Yeah, me as well. So let's move on and start talking about some of these players. But before we do, this week, it's very interesting. A lot of 15 to 20% ownership projected. So a lot of golfers that are going to be pretty highly owned, I would say. And one way to see how Ben and I and Alex and the rest of the team is playing these is through our PGA Pro Place tool. Now, typically, we come out with this right around Tuesday afternoon, Wednesday morning. We update it throughout the week. That is going to be free for the next 2 days, so a good way to check in on what we got going on behind the curtain. Of course, if you're still playing NBA, NBA ownership projections, and the MLB top stacks are our free tools today. And of course, Ben, get access to all of the great Osmo Plus tools and content for nearly every DFS sport out there. We were just talking on before. We've got a ton going on right now. Olympics golf coming on. Get your Osmo Plus Platinum Pass, $29.95 for the week. And, of course, just Ben and I on the golf side. And, of course, Jeff and everybody else, just $8.95 for the week. So stop guessing, start winning, and join Osmo Plus today. Five golfers this week, over 10K, Ben. Who would you like to play first? Different question maybe for you.
So I think that Cantlay is probably the safest when you factor in price and whatnot. He's fixed whatever his problems were. He was fine last week. The irons weren't there. Everything else was. 15th winner at the Memorial. Bryson's probably the biggest wild card. Brooks, I have the least interest in. Pretty neutral on DJ and Reed. That's my quick look at the five. So I think you have a lot of different options. You can always go up here. I'm less inclined to jam, though. Just I don't think I'm going to have many two double 10K plays this week.
Yeah, I don't think so. Maybe that's maybe a little bit of a product of Paul Casey being under 10K this week, because if he wasn't, maybe I would have a little bit more. But for me, Cantlay has played pretty good here as well, three straight top 15s. He's the fourth price on the board, though. So, Ben, we had a win a couple of weeks ago, a couple of bogey-free rounds last week. Certainly, the form is still there. But does he give us enough upside at 10,400 to give him our first spot in our board?
So again, I think it's all to do with your lineups. You know, Paul Casey's going to be extremely popular. He should be. And Cantlay kind of fits that same concept. You're going to have to mix it up a little if you go there, but it doesn't put tremendous strain. He's so well-rounded. I like his game and I like his fit for travelers in general. He's a perfect example. I look at his course history. It's fine. It doesn't stand out in any way, but more importantly, he's played this event five times and that's plenty of reps. He knows what he's doing. He's fine tee to green here and you've got the opportunity. So I think there's different ways to construct. Cantlay though, I feel pretty confident that he's not going to derail much. He may not win the event, but in a field this wide open, you don't need to allocate a ton to your top end guy. Any one of your six could really make major impact.
Definitely agree. I know he might be the obvious top priced on the board, but I think DJ's starting to find a little bit. Last week, he finally broke through with the putter, gained some strokes there. His second best statistical category was his approaches. And if you look last year, historically, that he gained it. He didn't win it with his driver last year, that's for sure. Did it with the irons, and that's kind of when he went on that very nice run. I think we're starting to maybe see Dustin come out of it. Of course, you know, he gained six strokes on his approaches last year. So, Ben, he's going to have to do that again to pay off this salary, or do you think there's something else he can do to get us up there? I actually like him in the betting market a little bit better than DFS market this week.
Yeah, I mean, those are the type of things, again, when you're dealing with players this good, it's more about how do you want to structure than if you want to play them. Obviously, in a perfect world, you'd get all these guys because they're the best players in the field. But you look at opportunity cost, ownership, exposure in the betting markets is definitely a factor if you can get some of these guys that way. To me, though, I look and we're going to get there. The 9K range is so strong that I ask myself, what am I really paying up for? I mean, do I want to get some exposure to Bryson and to Cantlay and some of these guys? Of course, but I find myself more apt to rolling the dice a little and hope that none of them win. And if they don't win, I think you'll have opportunities to really look at different types of builds.
Now, let me ask you kind of a secondary question using both betting and DFS side. So Johnson, 14-1 to win. He's coming in at 11,400. So I suggested maybe I like him a little bit better on the betting side, given that, you know, typically at 11,400, he's 8-1 to win or something much cheaper. So is there a point where I can fade DJ on DraftKings, have him win the tournament 11,400 and still make one of the best lineups? I mean, I'm basically suggesting this because last week, John Rahm, 11,200, came in at 12-1 or 11-1, whatever he was, won the golf tournament and was not on either the $10 or the $100 winning Millie Maker lineup. And the $10 had 270,000 entries, Ben. Blows my mind, but that's where we are.
Where we are. I mean, well said. I mean, to be take down these large field tournaments and whatnot, there's so much intricacies, and each week is different. Like the U.S. Open, you know, you see scores, you see five of sixes that can hang in. This is going to be a little more standard, you know, because scoring will be better, streaks will be happening, things along those lines. We, by the way, some great, great screenshots out there from the Osmo community. Very happy to see that. We had some people take down some major things, and that's always really exciting. I led the Millie for about 10 minutes. That's not going to get it done, but we'll see what we can do this week. And yeah, I think this is a more unique build in the sense that all players are incorporated here, long hitters, short hitters. You're really evaluating all different types of skill sets.
Yeah, I would have rather taken your winning the Millie screenshot for 10 minutes than what I dealt with, which was, you know, having the nut lineup and so, you know, it is the way that it is. Last guy I want to talk about, Patrick Reed. I have marked that I believe he's overpriced. He's kind of, I'll equate him to Joaquin Niemann. Joaquin Niemann has had a streak of made cuts. Obviously, it was snapped a couple of weeks ago, but a lot of T30s, T40s. For Reed, there's one top 10 in the last little bit, but I don't know if there's enough upside for 10,000 for him. So for me, it's a fade this week. But if you want to go cash heavy and put Reed, Casey in the lineup, I'm not going to tell you no. I just don't think he gives us a top five this week, which I think he needs to pay off the salary.
I'm kind of neutral on Reed. If I landed there, you know, I would be comfortable. He grinds. He's a great short game player. He knows what he's doing. But at the same time, I would rather save some money. I'd rather go get Cantlay. It's pretty indifferent. He's just, he does what he does. And when he gets going, particularly when his irons are good, you see the results. It's very, very solid. Off the tee is weak. But Reed's a world-class player. I just think in this week, I'd probably take the more prudent approach and go to Casey in cash and other places in tournaments.
Agreed. Let's go ahead and talk about Paul Casey for a little bit. Course fit and recent form, both connecting very well. That typically leads to really high ownership. But fading Paul Casey here, even last year at the 32nd, maybe a little bit of a payoff there. But in reality, if you faded Paul Casey any of the last 6 years at River Highlands, it has not worked. I don't think it's going to work again. The guy is just in such good form and seems to be in a real good spot in his golf game.
He's starting to get a theme similar to Bubba. Paul Casey likes certain tracks. And when he's there, you kind of want to play him. Valspar in your backyard is one of them. And it's no coincidence he was the back-to-back winner there. And Travelers, he's been so close so many times. Yes, ownership is going to be there. It's warranted. I think Paul Casey makes sense on every single level. You just know that you're not going to be alone.
Yeah, let's talk about Scheffler, but I want to come back to Casey. Let's just say that you really are dead set on either DJ or DeChambeau. It doesn't really matter. Pick one or the other there. We didn't even talk about Brooks Koepka, and that's because I don't think you should be playing Brooks Koepka at a non-major until he can show us that he can do it. And this week, he has to come top five to pay off the salary, so really easy fade. But let's just say you want to go DJ and Casey. That's going to leave you with 7,100. Have you done enough digging where you think you can make a quality lineup, or are you trying to just start your lineups with Casey? Obviously, in say the $20 or the $8 this week on DraftKings, you probably are going to have a little bit of both. But let's say it's your main lineup this week, the 200, 500, or you know, 1500, whatever it is. You just starting with Casey, or do you want to get super aggressive?
So I do think there are opportunities. So say you click Bryson and Casey.
Yep.
On DraftKings, you're left with 7,250 for four spots. That can easily be done. That's no problem. Okay. You are in a bit of a funnel because you're going to probably omit the rest of the nines. Mm-hmm. I tend to tell myself that I would rather have the opening to take two or three guys in the 9K range and start with Casey and go more balanced. It's easier to build like that. You're just weighing risk reward. Would you rather have three or four guys that are primed to really compete, or are you putting more eggs in? You know, you pick Bryson or DJ, you're hoping that they carry the tournament for you and then the rest of your guys cooperate.
Yeah. And I think in some instances, there is credence to putting Casey with DeChambeau. And, you know, trying to get another top 10 out of, say, the Ches Reavie range, you know, relying on maybe a little bit more course history, although Reavie is coming to some good form. And then you've got, you know, somebody like Richard Fowler, who I'm going to save for the value section because, you know, I've got a little bit of a conspiracy theory. Not a big one. This is a small one, but enough to qualify for my conspiracy theory of the week. Let's move down a little bit to a couple of other guys in this range. Scottie Scheffler. I wanted to ask you, one of his greatest strengths is his total driving, relatable to being able to hit the fairway at a pretty long distance. Do you think that the fairways being easy to hit here and not as many drivers being hit off the tee negates that advantage for Scheffler and maybe isn't as good of a course fit?
I don't think it's the best course for him. He's playing really well, and I like the fact that he's next to Paul Casey, because anytime you're right there, you get lost a little bit. But you're still paying a pretty good tag, and you're in no man's land, as you mentioned. I don't particularly want to start with Scheffler, but if he's your second, you're pretty aggressive. So I kind of don't know what I want to do. The next three names are very difficult. Scheffler, Streelman, and Wolf are guys. Streelman feels overpriced, but he's playing amazing. I'm not going to even pretend to know what's up with Wolf. To me, the lower nines is where I really want to attack.
Yeah, Streelman definitely a bit of a sticker shock, but listen, this guy since the Wells Fargo hasn't finished worse than T26. It's including two top 15s at majors, and the guy's won here before and took DJ down to the last couple of holes. So 9,400 may seem like a lot, but Streelman may be warranted. Yeah. I think Matt Wolf, the only case for him right now, given last week what we saw off the tee, was better. I mean, he kept the ball on the planet, but the course lent itself to whoever could hit it the furthest and have the least amount of yards into the hole was gaining strokes last week. That's just how it worked. So I'm not ready to play him. I'd rather play him next week. However, I played him 10% in the Millie Maker last week. So whatever that contest is this week, I'll probably get the same because it looks like it'll be the same leverage. Came in at about 2% owned. I think he's going to come in around there. Finau, I'm out. I can't play this guy. Okay. I can't get him right. He looked atrocious last week. He won't be in maybe more than 2% of my lineups this week.
Complete meltdown by Tony Finau. Thought he was primed, as a lot of people did. Really popular. His best attribute, he better not lose that, because the knock with Finau is he never wins, but he's so reliable. If he loses that consistency, you're going to have a real problem on your hands. He was non-competitive. He lost off the tee, approach, and around the green. He hasn't done that in... I'm scrolling back in a database.
It's deep.
Years and years. So maybe it's an outlier, or maybe Tony Finau's game is not in the best spot right now.
Guy that's game is variable right now, but one thing that has remained consistent has been his hot iron play. He's just had an extremely cold putter. When we look at last year, though, he was able to gain a couple of strokes putting for the week, and that yielded a top 11. I'm talking about Abraham Answer, Ben. I know that in our betting article coming up, he is one of your picks, or your pick, I should say. So talk to me about Answer, why we're buying back in.
Yeah, I'm definitely on Answer. 30-1 in the betting market, I think, is a really good number. Seems to like Travelers, played well here the last couple of years. But more importantly than that, you just mentioned it. Off the tee, he's very, very accurate. He's going to keep it in play. He's going to lean on his irons. He's coming off a missed cut where he just gained 5 strokes with the approach. I can live with that. It broke the cut streak. I don't care about the Europe tournament. And the putter has shown signs. He's had these pop putting weeks, and he's been so close so many times. 4 runner-up finishes over the last 2 years at certainly strong fields. And I look at Valspar, which I think is a decent comp. He was very good there. Now, he gained a ton of strokes putting, but to me, Answer at 91, a really good spot, and he fits a lot of builds for me.
Yeah, I'll be interesting to talk about those builds with you, knowing that we're both pretty high on Casey, where you go from there. Obviously, yeah. You know, we get into the value range, but I want to know if you're stacking 3 in the value range or if there are enough guys, say, in this 8,000 range, and let's go ahead and talk about that range now. Now, we can talk about Neiman. He's at 9K flat, but are you on my camp now that we need to see a top 15 out of him to roster him again? Because it has been since the Valspar, which has been almost 2 months, that we've gotten value out of him.
It's a tricky situation because I don't know. I can't tell if Neiman is like really close. I do think there's a chance that Neiman is really close to putting it all together, or there's a chance that he's kind of melting down, because I look at the finishes, they haven't been great. His around the green game is horrendous. His putter had been good and he didn't really capitalize. He gained 5 strokes putting at the PGA. That was good for a 30th. He gained 5.5 strokes at Valspar. It was good for an 8th. But honestly, both of those feel like he left a little out there. I will say he gained 3.5 strokes off the tee and 4 strokes with the approach last week, but he had a cold putter. So it seems like he's kind of in that zone where he can't get everything right at the same time. I don't mind him. I think I like him a little more than you, but he is firmly behind answer for me in terms of priorities.
One thing you and I talked about last week, which maybe it didn't pan out as well as I wanted to. I said, if you want to fade Louis Oosthuizen, you could go ahead into the top 5 market and get pretty good value there. I don't know that it panned out, though, fading him on DFS because he was so important to the points scored. There just wasn't a lot of DFS points out there last week. In fact, that Louis had an eagle and you know, one of the most birdies of the week put him as almost a must-own. At Paul Casey this week, at 9,900, he's plus 300 on the top 5. I, again, love that bet this week. But is that enough payout to fade him on DFS? And I think the answer is no. I think I got to bet him and play him.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you really like a guy, you don't want to just blindly fade. You know, you want to get exposure and positions in betting and DFS. The thing that I'll say is when last week, you're so correlated to placement points that if Louis played well in terms of placement points, there's no way to get it back. There is a scenario here where Paul Casey, he could play pretty well, but he doesn't score well. And you actually can get the best of both worlds. So I think that's one distinction. In the U.S. Open, as you mentioned, there's just not a lot of points out there. That won't be the case this week.
It's a great, great call. So some of those guys that maybe are more in play this week, I'll talk about Bubba Watson first. Outside of a terrible Saturday at Torrey Pines, he looked pretty good, and no one wants to play him this week. At 8,900, I think we can go maybe 12 to 15% and get 3 or 4X. And of course, Osmo Plus ownership projections, some of the best out there and part of our premium package. But a little behind the curtain, he's one of the only guys above 8,900. He and Matthew Wolf that are going to be under 5% owned. So I'm going to guess you're with me, would rather own Watson over Wolf if you had to pick one.
Definitely. I mean, the number one guy, Bubba likes what he likes. He don't like U.S. Opens. He likes the Travelers. He always has. It's you play Bubba where he is comfortable. And does that mean he's going to win? Obviously not. But he's shown time and time again, he comes here and something about this layout fits his eye. And the way he shapes the ball, he has opportunities. The stats don't lie. So Bubba is someone I think you can comfortably play this week. And, you know, him just making the cut felt like an accomplishment for him last week in the U.S. Open.
And he, for the most part, put 3 good rounds together too. Just that one awful round on Saturday. Now, last year he did miss the cut, but in 2 rounds, he lost 3.2 strokes putting. His putting is not that bad now. It's actually been pretty consistent. Not great, but it's been pretty consistent now for a little bit. Now, when I say consistent, you know, losing a quarter of a stroke to a half a stroke and not over a stroke. So he's at the high end of that range though. So maybe a little harder to get him into a lineup. But then there's some ownership that comes. Brian Harman, Harris English, those guys are going to carry a lot of ownership. So it should go to some pivots. Any of the guys, Cameron Smith, are you ready to play him again? He was bad last week. I mean, had a chance to make the cut and should have then tanked. What's your thought on him?
I haven't been playing him and now it's starting to work out, but it was pretty atypical. He was horrible around the green, and that's something we don't see from him too often. His tee to green game is never super strong. He's just such a crafty player. I don't mind it if he's very low owned. I don't like Harmon. I'll say this. I think this is a pretty weak range. Charlie Hoffman would be where I'd go just because his irons.
Even his form has been kind of shaky. Regressing a bit. Yeah.
But I have to ask you.
Yeah.
What do you do with Justin? I mean, Justin, talk about non-competitive. Oh, he was so from the bad get-go last week. What do you do with him?
Yeah, he's one of those guys that I'm going to put in the like the Max Homa bucket that you cannot consider them right now for your main lineup because they're so volatile. They're either going to miss the cut and not care, or they're going to come in the top 20. So for me, if you're playing the $8 or you're playing the mini max or whatever MME you have, sure, you can put Justin Rose in your player pool. But I would not consider him for a main lineup. There's just too much volatility there. And you think, I think you can go and get something, you know, a couple $400 cheaper, say, to Adam Scott, who, you know, yeah, he missed the PGA Championship, but that's because of a dreadful Monday. Other than that, you know, he's made almost every single cut that he's played in this year, and the form seems to be getting better. So I don't know why we'd spend $8,400 when we got Adam Scott at $8,000, who seems to be playing much better.
I'm with you there. I definitely like Scott over Rose. This is a tournament ripe range. You're going to get some low owned guys, and they're guys that have talent. They're winners on tour. Russell Henley, who at times certainly last week showed that he's playing pretty well. He melted on Sunday. That's not an over surprise, to be honest. But there's not a lot of stability in the eights. I think if you're building cash and you're going balanced, you're going to pepper the 9K range and pepper the 7K range.
Yeah, it seems to be what's going to happen here. Harris English, three straight missed cuts. Yeah, but before that, top 25 and T7, this guy, out of nowhere, third place at the U.S. Open. 71-68 over the weekend. I mean, crazy, right?
I thought he was going to win at one point. Like, when he posted and everybody was going backwards, I was just like, this is the end for golf. Like, you obviously have to cancel the tour if Harris English wins.
If that out of bounds is actually considered out of bounds for Jon Rahm, Harris English actually, I think, wins this golf tournament. I think Rahm staying in it kept Louis in it. If Rahm tanks, Harris English wins the golf tournament.
Dear God, that would be not so good.
8,200 this week intrigue you.
I think he's fine. I mean, he's playing very good golf. Credit to him. Did what he needed to do. Really, really ridiculous short game last week. But you know what? That comes with the territory, and some of that you gotta live with that. Reed does it. Other guys do it.
Yep.
Harris English did it. Ownership will tell the tale. I'd rather go to Scott, to be honest, at very low ownership, and think this is more where I pepper the range with lower owned, higher upside plays.
Is Siwoo Kim one of those guys? I know a couple weeks ago after the Charles Schwab, you and I were done with him, and he's reeled off a top 10 and a T40 at the U.S. Open last week. Obviously, the Olympic field just came out. You and I were talking about that. Probably, if I had to say, for Sungjae and for Siwoo, the most important start of their young career. I mean, everybody knows, and if you don't, obviously, they got to provide military service to their country of South Korea for 2 years before the age of 25. Unless you win an Olympic medal. So for Siwoo Kim, do we want to continue the form before the Olympics come in a month, or do we just want to get over there?
Yeah, it's tricky. I never know what to do. I mean, it's unquantifiable. He's been good. I mean, Tee to Green, Pete Dye, there's a lot of things that check out. I'm not in love with the price. I'm not saying that it's an overpriced per se. It's just, again, it's a difficult build. Is he your third man in? He's a pretty loose second man in. I think you're sacrificing a lot there. I don't know exactly how I'm going to get to him in a good amount of lineups. Just looking, visualizing how I want to attack this week, he doesn't really fit my plans.
Same here. I want to get two guys up top, which is really going to squeeze out the mid to high range. Even Watson a little bit. I want to get Watson, but it's squeezing him out a little bit. So for me, I think Adam Scott really trending here. I think you can find value in the top 10 at plus 500, Ben. I just think that might be a way to get exposure. And I think that Adam Scott is in the right realm. So anything you want to see or any other bets before we move on to the value range?
No, I think for me, this is I will say, actually, Adam Scott is 75-1 in the outright market. If you're building a big card, that's a big number for a guy that's obviously been there and done that.
Really is. It's going to be a hard number to pass up, especially when his putting. Have you looked at his putting recently?
I have not. Maybe I should.
He's like top 50 on the PGA Tour right now this year.
Yeah, him and Louis. Like, Louis is a putting machine. He is automatic. I've never seen
him. Really is.
Just doesn't miss. But he goes out of bounds on holes that you shouldn't do that on.
Yeah, what was that all about?
17? How?
Yeah, why? The only spot you cannot miss is left, and Louis did it. Honestly, probably one of the last people you and I would pick to do something like that, too. Just even the pressure gets to Louis Oosthuizen, and that's the bottom line there. But he just withdrew from the Olympics, actually, this morning. He's not interested. In fact, I don't know if you heard this. Just one more quick thing about Louis. He's building a farm in Ocala, which happens to be like an hour and a half away from me, in the middle of the state of Florida. He's moving his whole family there, and that's what he's focusing on, the horses? Farm and the FedEx Cup in Ocala, Florida. I don't know. But in any case, thought I'd pass it on to you. Some
what kind of farm? Like a horse farm?
Yeah, horse farm. So from South Africa, that's what he owned out there. And he's legit a farm guy, goes out and rides the tractor and does all that. So that's what he'll doing in the golden Ocala forest, the horse forest, as you put it. Yeah, it's horse country up there.
No matter. Well, get him primed, Louie, and we'll see you at Gulfstream. Easy enough. Right. It works for me.
All right, let's move on to the value section. Certainly some guys that'll help you win big this week. And if you do win big this week, we're going to let you – let's start over again. We want you to let us know about it. So go to our Awesome Hall of Fame Twitter account. Tweet us out the screenshot. And as long as you have the Awesome avatar in there, you place third in the top three of a contest with over 5,000 contestants, and you tweet the account, you're going to win a free month of Awesome Plus Platinum. So pretty good there. Not a bad thing just to put our Awesome avatar up there in place in the top three. So really cool stuff we got going on. Now, some of the value sections I mentioned – Ricky Fowler already, and I'll bring up Jason Day in this. The week after a major, prize pools are typically pretty big. They try and continue over some of those casual plays from a major. And we typically see a couple of big names at cheap prices to help those people make good lineups. Ricky Fowler is that this week. He's playing good, and there's no way he should be 7,300.
Agree. He's found something. He easily could have gotten into the U.S. Open, and if he would have parlayed a decent showing there, we'd be talking about a different priced Ricky Fowler. So you've got some names in here. I do want to give a quick walk of shame to myself for Phil Mickelson making that cut. Friend of the show, Brian, just pointed that out, and it's worthwhile. That one hurt me. My biggest bet really had him, and I had him big against Homa. Both of those did not work out. The thing that killed me is he played how I thought he would. He played terrible. He just got it done Friday, and getting it done Friday is going to get you through that cut. Was awful on the weekend, but that's the name of the game. You gotta take advantage, and I did not, unfortunately.
But, all right, so I always got to come back with a positive. I saw some notes last week and watched the show. It looks like you recommended a Garrick Higo missing the cut.
That did help, yes. Well.
So that probably mitigated a little bit feeling. Now, coming back to a golf course where fairways are easy to hit and it's a second shot golf course, Higo should probably be back on our minds. Now, granted, he's going to play every course right now because his whole life trajectory has changed in the last month or so. You'll see his name a lot coming up. Is this a spot you want to use it or you want to wait a couple more weeks?
I think I'm still on the wait. I'm definitely closer to playing him. I did not like the spot at the U.S. Open. I thought that was just a tough situation. And it's more that it's nothing against Higo, but you've got Keegan who absolutely loves this place. Homa is a great tournament play. I know he's very erratic, but with Max Homa, when you get him right, you're talking big time upside. And then you've got a string of guys. When you talk about Sam Burns and Doc Redman and HV3 types, I'm not saying I like those guys per se, but you've got big names. I think Higo, to me, is not where I would go in the upper sevens.
Yeah, just one more thing on Ricky Fowler. Who knows what it is, but there was talk that there was problems off of the golf course. Well, he just announced that he and his wife are pregnant and he's going to be a father come November. So maybe that settled those problems down a little
bit. Good job, Ricky.
Maybe they were having problems. And now obviously they're not having problems because she's pregnant and that settled them down. Results show I'm T8 at the PGA Championship, T11 at the Memorial. Granted, harder tracks. This won't be as hard. We'll see if the putting and iron play can keep up. We know off the tee has actually been pretty good. So that's a last note on Fowler. He should be 8,300, though. That's my opinion. In this range, you mentioned Sam Burns. Sam Burns is turning into a play at easy birdie fest. Do not play at hard events. Another miscut on the number last week. So does that intrigue you to go back, given the fact that he wasn't far off? But since the injury at the PGA where he withdrew, it hasn't looked good.
It really hasn't. I tend to, honestly, I might wait for if he's playing Rocket Mortgage and just let him go.
Yeah.
I'd rather play
Cam Tringale.
Yeah. Cam Tringale, I also don't know what his off the tee game has been broken, but his putting is on fire. I think for me, I'm going to keep it pretty thin up here. My favorite range by far is the lower sevens.
Me too.
You've got some big time names and I think some easy plays right there.
Yeah, let's talk about a couple of those. First, one more in the mid. Doc Redman, seeing a lot of value there. Seems like a really good course fit in the four straight, made cuts, two top tens. He's not in the low sevens, but will he make a couple lineups for you this week?
Probably on the outside looking in, if he's popular. Now, if he's low-owned, he's got that upside. We know Doc can score. It's going to be really ownership dependent. I do have to ask you real quick. Are you playing Jason Day?
No.
Okay.
No, he's in the let's get him a top 20. Like I said with Fowler, then I'll start to play him in the mid sevens, which is exact. I'm basically giving him the exact Ricky Fowler treatment.
That's fair.
I'm going to wait for a top 20. Now, the stats have been there, but they haven't been all together. Actually, kind of similar to Fowler, that the putter has gone for Day as it did for Ricky. And I think that that was such a big part of their game when they were rising up the world ranks and playing such good golf. They were so reliable from inside of 10 feet. And when that left Ricky, it, you know, kind of reverberated through his game. For Day, other parts of the game have actually been getting better. So I think it'll be soon before I play Day, but certainly never in my main lineup ever again. He's apt to withdraw on a heartbeat. In this price range, though, Aaron Wise, is he a guy 6,900 yards? Doesn't feel like a course we play him, but a course that I think is very similar to this is Mayakoba, where he almost won this year.
Aaron Wise has a low-key illogical like attraction to these coastal tracks, OHL, Bermuda, and not that this fits that per se, but a lot of what you need to excel there, you would take to River Highlands. And I look at where his game is at, 17th really at the good. PGA, 9th at the Memorial. He gained in all four categories. His biggest problem from January to basically May, he lost 8 out of 9 weeks with the putter. He's now gained in 2 straight. Mm-hmm. Aaron Wise to me is very dangerous here. If he matches the tee to green game with his putting of recent weeks, there is no way in my mind that he's not at least a factor in the mid sevens.
Now, are you pairing him up with your buddy Griot, or yes, is Griot down for some regression? I think that at the Memorial, he's just not great at tough tracks, but this is not that.
Tough tracks, pressure off the tee. Yeah. None of that is great really – Muirfield Village and this, to me, don't have many similarities.
Zero.
You got to get up and down at Muirfield. He lost 3 strokes around the green. This is keep it in the fairway, pepper the irons with short irons and wedges.
Hit 80% like, of your greens, then that's what he'll do.
Yes. And this isn't – you know, again, I'm no grass person, but it seems like getting up and down here, it's not super thick or super dangerous. You're going to be able to work around it. And Griot's putter has been much better. I like him a lot.
Yeah. With that being said, do you think the T19 that we saw 3 years ago would be in play if he has a match the field putting week?
I don't see why it wouldn't. Again, he should be able to get by off the tee and he should be able to lean on incredible. I mean, his ball striking numbers are better than everyone in this range. They're almost better than anyone in the tournament.
Except for if you bring in Eurostats, of course.
Oh, and we
talk
go.
About Mr. Italiano Guido Migliozzi, who, if you guys don't know him by now, you probably do. But if you don't, perennial great ball striker over on the European Tour, young kid too, still pretty young, just hadn't really broken through, couldn't find consistency. Well, that has changed in the last 3 starts, 2-2-4. Now, needs a big start here, but he could find himself on the PGA Tour after this weekend. He needs a T3 or better. He's in a very similar spot to William Gordon when Gordon came into this tournament last year in terms of made FedEx Cup points because of the T4 last week. So at 7,200, not everybody is quite there yet. I think we have about a 9% projected ownership. Are you just going to go Wise, Griot, Migliozzi, click, 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 or are we going to try and maybe separate them a bit?
So,
or not play Guido at all.
I'm not saying I'm not going to play him at all. I do think he's behind Ricky and those guys for me.
Oh, and Ricky too. Yeah, if you forgot about Ricky.
It's a low. To me, this is a range though. You can have Huge. You could have 3 or 4 guys in this range, and I wouldn't push back.
Which lends credence to Paul Casey and somebody else up top, right?
That's a build that I'm definitely exploring. You know, Guido is someone that he's very, very good from what I've seen, and he's getting it done. He shows up. I don't know how he'll react to getting some starts here and playing in big time events. Similar to Higo in some ways, we're going to have to wait and see. But if you think they're that good, you're not going to get
the waiting and see approach doesn't work, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So I think for Migliozzi this week at 7,200, I think our opportunity cost versus what we had at Higo at Congaree, I think it's maybe worth a shot here. Now, there are a lot of names, which is why I think doing a Bryson, Paul, Casey build is probably a little easier because you get Fowler in there as well. Now, how about if we need a couple $100s? Chez Reavy, obviously, you and I have been pretty all over. He was great value last week at 6,900. He threw up that eagle. He had a bogey-free round. You know, that after Congaree playing well. So I'm back in on Chez Reavy. I think he's a great play in this low sounds.
Yeah, props. We got to take our victory laps when we can get him. Props to us. We were on Chez last week, and he had a really rough start. Got super lucky with an eagle, but held nicely on Friday.
After the eagle, yeah. Eagle open his round on Friday, and then 16 straight pars after that. So
you know what? That gets it done at the U.S. Open. He did his job, flat seven. And we talk about some parallels. He's used to this in the sense that look at his history. Had some big time US Open finishes, and then he comes to Travelers and boom, 2019 winner at Travelers. And that was coming off a US Open where he was right there at Pebble Beach. He came in third at that US Open. So I do kind of like backing that. That's another flat seven. You've got some really interesting names. You've got Doug Gim, Russell Knox, Kyle Stanley, Pat Perez, Taylor Gooch, Luke List, Dahman withdrew. So that is one less.
Yeah, and listen, you mentioned a lot of those guys, but let's dive a little deeper on them. Doug Gim, Kyle Stanley, Taylor Gooch. Let's just talk about those three. All three guys at some point this year have been some of the best iron players on tour. So if they're going to hit 70% of their fairways this week, these are three guys we want to play because if they do that again this week, all we need is a match the field with their putter, and they'll be right there, first or second page of the leaderboard.
Can Doug Gim match the field with his? That guy is on the Morikawa plan of just wildly bad putting.
Do you think that changes this week?
So I'll say this. I don't think it changes, but it's not just about that. The point is, if it changes 20% of the time, 10% of the time, what are you going to get? And to me, you could get a big time showing. And that's where the appeal comes in. You're not going to be right more than 50% of the time. He's lost in 8 of 9. But when he does putt well, are you looking at a top 20, a top 30, a top 5? If you think the upside's there, I don't mind just saying, you know what? Give me some Doug Gim shares in large field tournaments.
Now, he gained, let's see, close to 6 strokes with his putter here last year. But after 5 straight missed cuts, we finally got a break in the form at Congaree at T14. So does William Gordon take the good feels and bring it back again? Or would you just rather play Reavy or Gim or Stanley, you know, $100 more?
I think I would rather do that. I'm also going to bring up Pat Perez is low key getting it together. He was someone, you know, looking when I saw this range, I figured I'd go to Knox, who I don't mind. I knew I'd go to Reavy. Pat Perez, 5 straight cuts, 10th at Palmetto, 6+6 with the irons. I think Pat Perez is starting to come into some form here.
Yeah, hasn't missed a cut since Valspar. So definitely interesting. Maybe a guy that you want to throw in there in your cash lineup. Like you said, best finish was Congaree a couple, 2 weeks ago. So top 15, yeah, certainly might be able to get it done. Carlos Ortiz going to be highly owned, it looks like, in this range, or maybe not highly owned, but 10%. You and I both said, no, it's not the course. Torrey's a little too big for his game, but TPC River Highlands is probably not. So are you just going to fade the ownership here in 10% and say Carlos Ortiz ain't going to beat all these guys?
Yeah, it's more the opportunity cost. If it was one or two guys that I liked, I would look to Ortiz. I like 5 of these guys down here. You just don't have the room. I don't have the room. So going to probably just pray that he doesn't burn me.
Yeah, I'm going to hope so too. And of course, got a lot of sports going on right now. And we have shows on all of them. The MLB Deeper Dive, that's going to go off at 4:45 today. Eric and Greg are on that show. Just want to let everybody know about our content coming up 6 p.m. the MLB Live Before Lock. And then it looks like today we've got some basketball games tonight. Is that right, Ben?
Oh, we got Game 2 of the Western Conference Finals. And it's a perfect segue. I do want to let people know, because we've got so much going on here, we have a new show. It's going to be every day. It's a little quick show, 15 minutes. Me and Josh Engelman, similar to the Contenders video, which you can find. It's called The Breakfast Menu by No House Advantage. And we're serving up three of our favorite picks on the betting side of things for the NBA. We're going to be doing every day. First episode is out, coming out this afternoon. So we break down that Western Conference Finals, Suns, Clippers, big, big game tonight.
And what's that called? The morning menu? Is that right? Did I get that?
Breakfast menu.
The breakfast menu. Oh, I'm
a
big breakfast.
We got bacon incorporated. We got a lot going on. It's going to be a good time. All you guys, definitely give it a listen. Let me know what you think.
Definitely a great chat there. So a couple of other guys in this 6K range. All right, I'm going to go back and we'll talk about John Pock. And I don't know this for sure, but from the statistics that I looked at from this guy, he shot the worst nine holes of golf score cumulatively since he was 10 years old. He went 9 over through 9 holes, ended up finishing the tournament at 8 over. So I said, I have to play him for at least 2 to 3 starts because of the pedigree. I'll play him again here. But a guy that I'm actually really excited about playing as well is Austin Ekrot. And maybe I'm pronouncing his name wrong. Ekrot. I think I've heard it pronounced Ekrot, but I don't know that it was right. Regardless, 22-year-old from Oklahoma State, just graduated. Now, he's in this PGA Tour University thing. So we got Corn Ferry Tour status, where he's gone 7th and 13th in his two starts there the last couple of weeks, and has been living with Victor Hovland, or at Victor Hovland's house, I should say, renting a room from him. And when Hovland comes home, they play golf and they talk a lot. So I think I like this guy at 6,600. He's going to be 1% owned, something small, but professional golf started off pretty good for him, Ben. 7th and 13th. Does that get you at all interested?
No. Okay. Wait, who are we talking about? Ekrot?
Yeah, Ekrot.
Yeah. So he seemed to have taken advantage. He played at OHL. He played very well.
Yep.
I found it was a two-part reason why I say no. One, I think Hank Lebioda, as Chad just pointed out, at 67, I think is very reasonable.
I'll be honest. Going Pock over Hank Lebioda cost me $20,000 at Congaree. That hurts. 24th to first. So I know that Hank Lebioda taking him over these young kids certainly has been proven better. Hank, how long do we expect to keep it up, though, with him? I mean, it's been pretty good.
It has. Making cuts. UFC for right there. You've got Benny on right there. The other thing I want to bring up, and I'm trying to get on your level with these guys, to me, and I know it's small samples, but Davis Thompson, he made the cut and he really struck it well, and he's 6,300.
Oh, I didn't even see that.
That's a pretty good price for a guy that, I mean, again, I don't know a ton about them.
Yeah.
But I feel pretty comfortable saving the money if I had to pick any of them and actually going to Davis Thompson, who looked pretty good.
Yeah, it's a great point. And he really battled. He was 5 over through his first 6 holes.
And he got through.
Ended up making the cut and got through. So you got to love that, especially the grit showing in his first start. Definitely interested there. Kind of I'll say the big three, if you will, of that what they're trying to market this year with the 1-2-3 on the PGA Tour University. But at 6,600, it is going to be hard to play this Ekrot kid when, you know, Wyndham Clark is there, who this isn't the course for him, given the fact that you need to be good with your irons. But I'm just saying, for that purpose, even Tom Hoagie, Hollywood Hoagie, you know, he's pretty good with his irons. He's also 6,600 playing in the Olympics. I don't know how we got there. Anrabhan Lahiri at 6,500. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, how he qualified, I don't know. You're going to have to look that one up for me. But how about Ryan Armour? I know that's a name we don't talk about much, but T28 at Byron Nelson, T8 at Congaree, has a top five here at TPC River Highlands. So, Ben, Ryan Armour, I know it's not a name. I love the guy. I talk to him probably more than any other PGA Tour golfer that's currently playing. So maybe a little soft spot. But is he in play for you this week?
He is, again, not a core play, but he's someone, I think this is a pretty good course for him. His putter has been fantastic, and he knows who he is. I like guys like that. He's not going to blow your way off the tee. He's going to get to courses that he feels comfortable at, and that's how these guys stay on tour. They take advantage of the weeks that fit their game. Ryan Moore.
I was just going to bring him up. It feels like at least once a year he's talked about his chalk. Here he is, 6,800.
Yeah, I mean, it's not to say that, like, Ryan Moore's been bad for a while now, but I do think these are the type of events, it hones in on their best versions of their games. So I think you can look to them, you're just sprinkling, you're trying to beat 58,000 people, and these are the type of plays, you get them right once a year, it can make the difference.
They sure can. Steve Stricker is playing in the Champions Tour event. Just wanted to make that clear. Yeah, don't pick gone. Him. Maybe a decent, you know, might have been a decent pick here at 6,800. I'm not going to lie. So here's a name that we haven't talked about in a while, but our buddy Eric Lindquist, I'm sure, is going to bring him up to you tomorrow night, given the fact that gained over four and a half strokes with his approaches at Congaree. And I'm talking about Bo Hostler, Ben. If his irons are really coming around, we know the guy can light it up with a putter. This might be a good fit for him. His off the tee game has definitely improved this year. So maybe time to give Bo Hostler a look.
Interesting guy. Yeah. I don't know what another one where I can't tell where he's trending, because if you told me he's going to start getting together off the tee, I would say watch out, because the guy gains 8 strokes putting every week, it seems like. Yep. His putter's been a little quiet for mm-hmm. him, and maybe it's just a matter of time before he syncs up the irons in the putter, and then we're really off to the races, or something is flipped. But he needs to do that. Obviously, his numbers at Palmetto were the best he has struck it basically ever.
So that's going to be hard for me to fade.
Yeah, that's definitely a head turner. Whether you think he sustains that or that's just an outlier, that remains to be seen.
Sure, as another guy that's certainly striking the ball well right now. I think 2 weeks ago was certainly a better setup for him, but it's hard to ignore form. Hudson Swafford, T2. Do you think that was a product of really knowing the golf course more than everybody and just catching one of those, you know, weeks where there was no rough to be had and he didn't miss many fairways, because not many people did. What do you think it is? I mean, with this guy, he kind of just comes out of nowhere and then disappears.
It's tough. I do think it's mostly a product of similar we were talking about or with Armour. You know, that was the type of course for Hudson Swafford to show up. Yep. He'd be very aggressive. He's not going to get punished off the tee.
Maybe similar to where he won, right? The Dominican?
Yeah, maybe that trampolines him to some bigger finishes and more consistency. I don't really see it, though, to be honest. And I think for me, just as we kind of head on out here in a couple minutes,
yeah,
I don't feel the need to really go that low often, because am I really doubling up playing like Brooks Bryson? Probably not. So I don't see the need to really dig too often.
Oh, doppelganger for Swafford. No, I'm not talking about Harris English. I'm talking about Patton Kizzire, the three-headed Sea Island, Georgia monster. 7,100 is at least more intriguing than he's been when he's been missing the cut the last couple of times at higher prices.
Price isn't bad. It's just he's not in Texas.
If he doesn't gain 6 strokes putting, he's not coming in the top 50 to do that.
Isn't that the truth? And yeah, he seems to literally – he loves Texas. Charles Schwab, Byron Nelson, Valero. Everything else has been garbage. He's going to be a pass again, just because I really like Chez and Knox and Stanley and those guys. I think that – and Ricky. Like, tell me I can get Ricky for a couple $100. I'm going to do that every time.
Yeah, especially with Taylor Gooch sitting right there too.
Yeah, I know Taylor Gooch.
Kind of brushed over him, but he hasn't missed a cut, you know, since Valspar 2 months ago, and is just hitting it well with his irons, and that's what we need here. So other guys playing well. We got a couple of minutes left. So Adam Hadwin, he's popped up a couple of times. T8 at Charles Schwab, T40 last week. Any interest in him? And how about one other name below at 7K that you're going to be playing this week?
Yeah, I mean, I think down here, I'm going to stick to my themes. I do want to throw out one kind of dark horse. It's David Lipsky, who
I thought it was me, Kevin Chappell, but keep going.
Oh my God, Lord help us. David Lipsky's a guy that, you know, he's played in Europe. He's an American, but then he started to get some Korn Ferry starts, taking advantage of him.
For sure.
I like what he's been doing. I think his game is actually trending upward. He got into Palmetto at Congaree, 8th place, gets another start.
Yeah.
I have no problem with this guy. I think he is primed to make another cut. And when you're talking sub 7, you know, full fields, T65, you're going to take made cuts all day, every day.
Sure are. The back-to-back second place finishes at the Emerald Coast and then 2 weeks later at the MGM on the Korn Ferry Tour basically got him his PGA Tour card. He's added another couple of made cuts, and he will be part of that Korn Ferry Tour qualifying in the top 25 for a regular season. I think, you know, a lot would have to happen for him not to do it. So we're going to see a lot more of Lipsky next year. Be interesting to see how he does on, let's say, a tighter track, but a smaller track. Sometimes his off the tee game happens to be his best, at least on the European tour. Now, granted, you know, maybe there aren't as many longer hitters over there. That's why he can gain. So be interesting to see a guy that we're certainly going to have to keep our eye on. So a good one there. All the way down, I just did bring up Kevin Chappell. 7 of 12 cuts, you know, who knows where his game is. Certainly we've seen him do well in the past, but you mentioned Davis Thompson at 6,300. If I'm going down there, that's probably who I'm going to click. Any other guys way down the list? You want to play Brooks's brother? Do you want to play, I don't know who this kid is. Maybe Scott Stallings' son, Stephen Stallings. No, I don't know if they're related, but any other guys that you want to play down here?
No, the only other guy I'll say, we had earlier in the show, we had Joe in chat who said he loves to watch the show, but he never catches this live.
Okay.
And he was here today.
All right.
We need you, my friend, to come in every day because he drops. What about Sheamus? Sheamus was a late add to the field, and he is playing really good golf at 6,600. Sheamus vaults basically above almost everyone I've talked about in the 6K range.
Yeah, here's a guy that is playing not on on a lot of status right now and certainly needs a big start, and he's done pretty much everything we could have asked for. You know, AT&T Byron Nelson in the top 10. So interesting name, 6,600 power. I think he'll be on in those aggressive lineups. I'll use him. I'll use Ekrot in this area. Maybe a little Hoagie. A little down cheaper, I guess. There's one name. You're not interested in Chase Koepka at all? At 4 of 7 cuts made? Nothing great, though.
I think it's, listen, if you need someone down there, I get how you're getting there. Vince Whaley, as Chad just mentioned, is down there.
That's the next guy I was going to mention, yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to truly need anyone sub 65. And I think if I did, I would probably click Davis Thompson.
Okay. Two names that I've clicked before, Shelton and Tway. I don't think I'm getting to either of them this week. I don't think they set up well for it. So, all right. Well, I think that'll wrap it up here. And of course I'm playing a little John Clark. I already mentioned that, but just wanted to
throw
it out because all right. Well, tomorrow, 8 PM, you and Eric, you're going to be breaking down if there's any weather concerns, the waves, any impact there and any stackings you're doing. So, Ben, why don't you send us out of here? We got Olympics and the Open Championship all coming up in the next month.
It never ends. As you mentioned, and all the work, make sure to check out Jason Roslin's got the videos, quick hitter videos, sleepers, fades, best bets. Me and Josh, contenders video, our articles are posted. And as he mentioned early in the show, our pro plays. If you want to get, if you're building more and more lineups, you get how Alex is doing it, how Jason is doing it. I'm doing it a little differently because I build by hand. It fits a lot of different types of players. It's one of my favorite things about Osmo. We have a lot of different types of players as content people. So it's not like, oh, well, you guys all do it one way and I don't, and now I can't really learn from you. We have someone kind of for everyone, and that's a great thing. So we'd love for you to get inside the ropes, even if it's just for the week. So on that note.
I got one more thing I want to say. Yeah, one more thing. Because the play doesn't stop on Thursday after lock happens, right? Alex has been crushing showdown. Picked up another win last week. The exact projections he uses, he gives to you guys every day for showdown projections and ownership. And he even had Jordan Spieth in the lineup and Paul Casey. And he told me that he might have read one of my articles and upped the exposure on them. So it doesn't just stop with the week-long showdown stuff. Has been terrific. So join us here, and we will be back for the Rocket Mortgage Classic next week, then the John Deere, then we get into open season. So good luck, everybody. Thanks, and we'll see you next week.